Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're your guest hosts, Jen and Dave. In today's show, we'll be taking your calls about conscious compassion and awareness, and we'll talk to you soon. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry. Are you there?
I can hear you far. Are you still in Africa? Because you folks are so far away that we're just not going to be able to have a conversation. So I hope somebody's listening in who can.
Okay,
turn
I can barely hear you also. We'll
something.
Get the engineer to work on it a little bit. Is that any better, Sherry?
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you just barely.
Okay, well, maybe it's...
That's a lot better suddenly. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
There we go.
Oh, you're back in the States.
Just arrived,
just a second. Good to hear your voices.
Sure. How's it going?
Great.
Last time I saw you was in Africa, I think.
That's right. It seems like just moments ago, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yeah, my body still thinks it's in Africa.
Yeah, my body thinks it's somewhere out over an ocean somewhere, about 37,000 feet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But I'm having, I want to report that I'm having a marvelous time. We came back to, for me, starting an email class tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
On our new book, Making a Change for Good, and I'm pretty excited about that. I've been working on that, and then putting the finishing touches on our latest book, which is going to head off for the printers in a couple of weeks.
Wow, that's really exciting. You hit the ground running, didn't you?
I did, and you know, I like it that way. It's either that or succumb to that pesky sense of... tired.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you might as well replace one thing that's fun and exciting with another thing that's fun
Precisely.
And exciting.
Precisely. And it was fun and exciting where we were over there, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Yep. Do you want to, we have a caller on the line. Do you want to tell people a little bit about what happened before we do that, or what do you think?
Let's hear from whoever is there, and then if we have a little gap, we'll fill people in on it a little bit. Otherwise, you know, maybe they've been following along with the blog.
Yeah, they might be filled in already.
Yeah. So let's see who's there.
Okay, well, first up, we've got William in Pennsylvania.
All right.
William, welcome to Open Air.
Hello, Jen, Dave, and Sherry.
Hi.
I can hear Jen and Dave quite well. It's a little difficult to hear Sherry.
And
I don't
know, William, I'm having so much trouble hearing you that you've now taken over their slot.
Oh, okay.
So again, I hope somebody is listening, just dialing away back there in a studio somewhere.
Okay, you just became loud and clear.
You too. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm really struggling.
That's always a tricky question, isn't it?
It is, because... And I was really, really wanting to be open to guidance tonight.
Uh-huh. What's going on?
Well, kind of a progression since, you know, as we've been talking over the last year from time to time. I guess one thing, I'm struggling around sometimes some things that seem like clarity, or if I'm getting a sense of my, I guess my conditioning maybe, but the clarity has a lot of kind of, feels like a lot of pain and turmoil with it. Like, the idea, it seems like I'm kind of breaking through some layers of denial almost, you know, kind of using the addiction sort of framework to talk about it, which I know I've talked about with you in that way, and it's really been hitting me over the head lately how kind of deep this addiction has gone and how much it's controlled my life.
Uh-huh.
And it's really been becoming more and more apparent because of a lot of activity involved with my family of origin, which is this, you know, kind of the learning grounds for all of this. And I think, you know, one place where I really feel stuck is it's really difficult, and I'm seeing the addiction aspect to it more and more, feeling like I can't do much about it, and also realizing how the pattern has been repeated elsewhere in my life. So, you know, inclinations I've had over the last 2 years that I've been involved in my family with this sort of business project, I've kind of stayed with it instead of running away because I suspected that I was just going to carry this with me and recreate it as I have elsewhere. So I'm kind of in this really stuck place, and, you know, it's like I feel at times like I have some clarity around what I might do differently, or, you know, my role, or what I keep doing, or how I keep doing it with my family that feels lousy. And when I think of some alternative things that I could do, or what might seem to make sense, it brings up incredible amounts of resistance and terror.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked enough that you know, you recognize these components for what they are. Is that true?
You know, I think I do.
Okay, let me give you a rundown, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So, and we'll talk about me, okay, because it's always easier to see it in somebody else. So, I'm addicted to alcohol. And the alcohol addiction is the focal point of my life. Okay, everything I do centers around that. How to get a drink, how to keep people from knowing I'm drinking, how to get addiction.
Right, right.
Okay. Now, when I recognize that my life is going down the drain in a big hurry, and that if I don't stop drinking, I'm going to be without choices. What conditioning, what karma is going to say is, yeah, but you can't change anything about your life. Because if you do, you'll just be running away from this problem. So there's no reason for you to stop seeing your friends. There's no reason for you not to go to the bar every night. You can handle this in the same circumstances. Okay?
Right.
And for a while, I go along doing that because I'm really believing that this is true. Yeah, that makes total sense. Even people like Sherry Huber will say, you know, if you run away from something, it's just gonna come up in the next place you find yourself. Okay? So, yeah, so I might as well stay here. Then you get it. No, this really is not working. I cannot stop drinking while I'm with these same people doing this same thing. One day I just get it with great clarity. Okay? And so I say to myself, you know, I've got to stop this. I need to stop seeing these people. I need to stop going to those places. And the reaction, instead of everything inside of me saying, oh, thank God, we are so grateful that you've realized this and you're going to take these steps because otherwise your life was going to be over. What I get is huge resistance and terror. Now, why would that be the case? Because what is causing me to stay with these people in this circumstance, doing what I'm doing, is egocentric karmic conditioning that has as its only goal the control of my life. And if I stop doing those things, it's going to lose control of my life, and it does not want to. Now, if there are, I don't know how many people might be listening to this show, but I can guarantee you that if every one of them called in and told us the progression of what happens with them in looking at their issue, it would be exactly what I've just outlined.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It doesn't matter whether it's relationship or alcohol or work or exercise or family or whatever it is. Whatever is the thing that egocentricity has and uses to keep a person in bondage, the progression is exactly the same. You have to do this, even though it makes you miserable. You can't not do it. The fact that you do it makes you a miserable, worthless thing. If you try to stop, we'll all go crazy until you continue.
Right.
One of my closest friends has a sugar addiction. It's exactly the same progression.
Okay.
Not good news, is it?
Well, it's not completely unfamiliar news. It's
no.
There are times I get to that sense at times too, and it's sort of like it hits me pretty hard. I'm like, you know what? This isn't going to work. I can't make it work.
That's right.
And
I can't make it work because I'm an addict and this is addiction. It's not like you're going to become such a wonderful person in these circumstances that suddenly the addiction falls away. It doesn't work like that. It's not even the case that there's something wrong with you and that's why you're in this situation with this addiction. It is the human condition. The addiction is to the illusion of a separate self, suffering. The egocentric karmic conditioning. That's the addiction. And anything else that's going on in our life is just a support system for that addiction.
Right.
Yeah. It's not personal.
Well, I'm also aware, like, I mean, I've been, and I guess this is, I'm thinking it's some level of clarity. I'm aware of a lot of the subpersonalities that come up. I mean, there's tons of them. Or if there's, you know, only a few, they have lots of different takes on this. So, you know, they might be the same personality, but there is clearly, I mean, I have not been able to sustain any connection with an adult side for very long. And I am just so aware of just basically small children who are present, who are who feel helpless, who feel like they're not going to survive, who feel like, you know, one of the things that keeps me linked to my family is the terror that comes up that says I'm dependent on them, I'm not going to survive without them, or they're not going to survive without me, that codependent sort of thing.
Right, and then what I hear you getting to is, no, actually, you're not going to survive with them.
And that's the other, that's the catch 22, is like, I'm not going to survive with them, and I'm not going to survive without them. So I'm kind of, it sometimes feels like I'm caught between two terrors.
Oh, yes. This is the world of duality.
Yeah.
So in getting ready to start the email class, I was writing something today. And what I was saying to people is, ending suffering is so simple. It is the simplest thing in the world, because all suffering exists in that conversation that you're describing. Without that conversation of, I'm not going to survive without them, I'm not going to survive with them, there would be no issue, and there would be no suffering, and there would be no non-survival, because the whole idea of non-survival comes up in that conversation. And the whole point of a conversation about not surviving is to keep you in the conversation.
Right. Yeah, it is so powerful.
But it's not.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's actually not.
You're sitting in a bar. You've got your glass in front of you, and the bartender says, "Do you want a drink?" And the voices in your head are screaming, "Yes, yes, 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 yes." Then you've got another bunch of them screaming, "No, no, 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 no." And the simple answer is get off the bar stool and walk out of the room.
Right, right.
If you stay there, if you stay in the conversation, nothing is going to change.
Yeah.
Until, you know, finally you carry it to whatever is its conclusion. Which is that you will suffer yourself to death.
Exactly. Which feels like it's headed that direction.
The thing about it is, William, you have no information that says you won't survive.
Right, it's all belief.
It is all belief. Now, you've got some pretty strong information that says if you stay in this same relationship with your family, there's a good chance that you won't survive.
Yeah.
Because your odds are getting worse and worse and worse with every passing day. But you have no information that if you are not in this relationship with these people that you won't survive. You don't have that information. It's just a voice in your head telling you that.
I'm sorry?
It's just a voice in your head telling
you. Yeah. I mean, because I mean, I have survived up to this point. I haven't always been with my family.
Yes.
What about what I mentioned earlier, though, about what seems to be awarenesses of how, I mean, I'm seeing it. I mean, I'm even currently involved in another sort of business project that isn't with the family that is mirroring everything with my family and the job I held before.
Absolutely.
The same
Absolutely.
Thing happened.
If I walk out of that, get off that bar stool and walk out of that bar, I'm still going to be an alcoholic.
Right.
But things are going to be a lot clearer off the bar stool than they are on the bar stool.
Yeah. I guess my question is, I mean, I definitely have been feeling like I am an alcoholic in recovery, and I keep going back to the bar.
I would not assume in recovery.
Okay. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, and you're
and
still
keep...
drinking. And you're arguing for drinking.
Yeah.
You're making cases for why drinking is a good idea for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called not having suffered enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you that's, you know, that's in those systems, that's why they talk about hitting bottom. When you finally hit bottom, you're not going to be arguing any longer that your addiction is a good idea for you.
Yeah.
You might know that you desperately want to drink, but that's not the same as thinking that you can make it work.
Right.
Okay. Your assignment.
My assignment.
Get off that bar stool and get out that door.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
Or face the fact that you don't want to.
And accept all that comes with that.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
Instead of this, I don't. That's agonizing.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't want to quit drinking, then what I need to do is, you know, stake out my claim there on that stool and know that this is my life.
Right, right.
Stop the self-hate, stop the beatings, stop the, you know, if only, what if, in another world, in a parallel reality. This is it. This is my choice. This is what I'm doing. And this is what I get. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that helps. It's not easy, but it helps. Would I just, because I'm signed up for this email class, should I pick something a little easier for the email class, or can I?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. And where you are now, it'd probably be a great thing to pick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Getting off the bar stool.
Thanks, William.
All right. Thank you.
Good.
Thanks, Jen and Dave.
Yeah. Thank you, William. Getting off the bar stool, it seems like that's what we're all up against, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's exact. Whatever. Yeah. Whatever it is that's sitting on that bar for us, that's what we're up against.
Yeah. Whatever it is that makes us want to choose something other than ending suffering.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's that difficult place of realizing that there really are, for lack of a better way of talking about it, two realities. And in that illusory reality of egocentric karmic conditioning, when we walk into that world, when we are identified with that illusion of a separate self, then what we want as that illusion is to suffer. You know, I want that drink. I want those relationships that don't work. I want to be me. I want the drama and the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. It's what I want as that illusion of a separate self, because that's what keeps the illusion alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we step back out of that, when we move into a place of center or clarity, then it's obvious what's going on, and there is no one who would choose that. It's not desirable, it's not appealing, it's not tempting. So it really is an experience of going into these different realities and either being here in clarity and authenticity and original nature, or falling asleep, going into ignorance and delusion, and really believing that made-up fictitious world is real, and that person who inhabits that is real and is who I am.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you very much for that clarity. It's time for the break. So we're going to slide into a break for a second. You're listening to Open Air with
Jerry. And Dave, yeah? When you slide in there, ask them to up your mic just a little bit, please, because
okay,
I can barely hear you.
Okay.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we've got a couple more callers on the line, but before we jump to that, I wanted to mention some upcoming events that we've got.
All right. What's going on?
Well, there's a couple things in California.
Uh-huh.
One is at Mount Madonna on the weekend of August 17th. Another, and that's an event with you.
That is true. I think we're going to look at my latest obsession of making a change for good.
Oh, perfect.
You think?
And then Esalen, also in California, on the 31st of August.
Yes.
And
a lovely spot.
A lovely spot. If you're an East Coaster, we also have an event with you at Kripalu in Massachusetts on the weekend of August 24th.
Yes.
And not to be missed, September 8th, the Bridgewalk.
September 8th, the 6th annual Golden Gate Bridgewalk, to raise money for the vulnerable children in Africa.
That's right.
And yeah.
I have a feeling any day now we're going to be announcing a very ambitious fundraising goal, so stay tuned.
Yes, for which we are very prepared.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
All we need to do, actually, you know, all we need to do, we would need to do to meet any goal that we would want to come up with is all of us get together and commit to doing it.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's one of those things. It's like ending suffering. It's all terribly simple, and it's actually quite easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just make up our minds to it, and then we do it.
Yep.
And then we have the result that we're hoping for.
Yep. Yep. And not only is it easy, but it's fun.
But what?
It's fun.
It's fun. You know, again, if you would ask the powers that be to please turn up your mic so that I could hear you, I'd be so deeply, deeply grateful.
Okay. All right.
Yes, it's fun. It's way more fun to be joining something and participating in something that we feel good about than not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's what gives that little spark in life. I was telling somebody today about, I guess it was just, I don't know when it was, I guess a week ago, Saturday, when we had the great football event between the Living Compassion folks and the students from the neighboring community.
Right.
And just how much fun it was. Now, I don't know how many of us, but I project an awful lot of us wish that we could be out there on the field actually doing it.
Yep.
You know, actually chasing that ball around and kicking it, and you know, the falling down and getting kicked and stuff didn't look that much fun to me, but the rest of it looked really, really fun. And yet, it wasn't the role for each of us to be out there.
Right.
So some folks were out there on the field, and the rest of us were standing on the sidelines screaming our lungs out, and getting a report later that they the ones who are actually on the field were playing harder than they would have believed possible, simply because we were all so enthusiastic about what they were doing.
That's right.
And we can apply that to something like a fundraiser for feeding kids.
Yes, exactly. Yep, that we all have a role to play.
Yeah.
Some of us will be there the day of the event for the bridge walk. Some of us won't, but there's a part for everyone in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when we get to see all of the good things that the money will go to do.
Oh, boy. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Going back there, I mean, we go back there frequently, but if we just went, you know, once a year for this our summer, their winter trip, and seeing the change in the people, not some, you know, kind of, I'm sure they're having personal growth experiences, but they're eating. They look healthy.
Yeah.
They're one of the things that I was most moved about in this trip is that they're able now to have soap and that they can bathe and wash their clothes, and how good that feels for them to have such a simple thing that we all take so much for granted.
Yeah, their lives have really changed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so are ours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
And also perhaps the people who have helped make it happen. You know,
yes.
The people who have done the fundraisers and made the contributions, because, you know, we're all participating in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is a group effort.
It really, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we always talk about, Sherry, that one of the things that makes us most happy is when you and I will read emails that will come in from someone who's using the we pronoun when they talk about the work that we're doing.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily there in Africa. They're not getting to travel there. But there's a sense that everyone's a part of it, that it's our project. It's not just a few people. It's a whole huge team effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like, that was my football game.
Right.
You know, we were all in that game. It was the Cantalomba football game.
Right.
And it was for all of us.
Yeah, and it's, in a way it's neat because it's like we're bridging two communities.
Uh-huh.
You know, the more time we spend there in Africa, the more we get to know people in Cantalomba, and the more I think all of us feel a part of Cantalomba. And then we have a whole community here who is also becoming a part of Cantalomba.
Yeah.
It's like there's, you know, there's two worlds meeting with, you know, just a little bit of kind of back and forth.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think I got an email this morning of something that's going out to folks suggesting that next week could bring Teresa, who heads our project over there, over for the bridge walk.
Yeah,
yep.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the blog goes a long way towards people feeling included in that. I talked to my sister when I got home to say I was safe and sound, and one of the first things she asked was, how's Purity doing? And I thought, how does she? Oh, right, of course.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And we're getting closer and closer to folks there being able to really find out about people here.
Right. Yeah.
Because as they have access to computers and to the web, then they can see what happens here, what they can see pictures of the monastery and different things that we do and who these people are, who are just names for them. And
I just had this image here as you said that, you know, we broadcast the annual celebration live for anyone who wanted to see it around the country, and I just had this image of casting the bridge walk back to Zambia so that people in Zambia could watch it.
Uh-huh.
Very fun.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year, 2008.
Yeah.
So, we have Jennifer in Pittsburgh on the line.
All right.
Jennifer, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hey. How are you?
Sorry, it was kind of hard to hear you for a second.
I don't know what is, you know, with all of this technology, I don't know why we can't hear each other. Do you? We so want
to. Can you hear me, though?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
When I scrunch up a lot, I'm willing to do.
Oh. Okay, I can hear you greatly now. Can you hear me?
It's perfect.
Good.
What's going on?
Well, you, we met each other at the Pittsburgh retreat, and I felt like it was so eye-opening for me because I feel like I really uncovered one of my processes or my only process. I don't really understand it all yet, but for me, I think I've told myself for 30-some years that life's too hard and I can't do it and I'm not good at it and I'm just always going to suffer because there's something wrong with me. I mean, that's pretty much it.
Uh-huh. That's quite a little sequence of events, isn't it?
Yeah, and it tapped into everything with my life. It tapped in, you know, why I had problems with eating or why I didn't want to exercise or why I was afraid at work or why I was afraid at home. It just, and you taught me to really, you gave me a little story that was just so great about if my dog was in the house and there was a fire, what would I do? Would I go get him or would I say, I can't do it, it's too hard?
Right.
And I really realized, you know, like, it was just so clear that I have to save myself. I have to save her.
Yeah.
And I haven't been.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been doing these majorly wonderful things with realizing that I have these crazy voices in my head telling me, no, you don't like to exercise, and but you don't want to meditate at home, and you don't want to fix your house, and I've been really successful at having this conversation in my head right back at that voice. Well, what? Yes, I do. And I'm going to go run. And I'm, yeah, no, actually, I want to meditate. And so I'm learning that I can just have that conversation back and find that I can do something different.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's so liberating beyond words.
Yeah. It's shocking, isn't it? Realize, as you're describing, that all of your life, you were listening to that voice and assuming that what it was saying was true and accurate.
Yeah, of course.
And so if that was the case, how could you not feel bad and defeated and hopeless?
Yeah.
And then to take that little half step back and go, wow, you know, not only is that not true, it's not me. It's a voice. It's a voice talking. It's
right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. I feel kind of goofy doing this, but I remember one of the suggestions you had was, you know, to say when things get hard. You know, sometimes I don't want to do stuff for my dog because I feel like I can't do it. I feel like I can't put medicine on his paws because it's too much pressure. So I had this conversation in my head based on something we talked about at retreat, which was, okay, I understand you don't want to put medicine on the dog's paws, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
We can do it, and we're going to do it, and that's just that. And I feel kind of funny using this language that there's a we. And I guess it's okay, right?
Well, it is your experience, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's so amazing because, again, we're taught to believe that we're one person and that sound inside of our head, that information inside of our head, it's who we are. It's that, you know, that's me thinking, and there is just only one me. And then we start looking at it and realize, well, that's not true.
and it's not my experience. I have all of these different people who could be present in my life at any given time. And if I, whatever that is, you know, if I don't step up in the way that you were just describing, then I'm left at the mercy of whoever happens to be wandering through. And what I notice about that is a lot of those folks don't seem to like me.
Right.
Yeah. So if I, from that centered place, can sort of marshal the troops, you know, instead of just leaving the person to do a job who says, I don't want to, it's too hard, I don't like it, I don't think I can, if I come in the way I would if it were an actual small child. You know, I have a little friend who's soon to be 5, and she'll say things like that, and my response is going to be, well, I'll help you. You know, let's do it together. We can do it. It's okay. You know, and you don't have to like it. It's not a requirement that you like it or think it's fun to put medicine on the dog. But the dog needs the medicine, and we can do it, so let's do it. And then it's fun instead of being hard and something to feel bad about.
Yeah, I found that the dog is doable, the meditation's doable, the exercise is doable, and so forth. But the one thing I got stuck with this week, it just threw me for a loop. It's like I'm underwater, spinning around, trying to figure out where is up. It is relationship. This guy broke up with me, who I was even thinking I didn't even like, but he breaks up with me. And I just, it just threw me into this, oh my God, I'm pathetic, I didn't do this right, you know, what did I do that's wrong? And I just kept beating myself up for 3 days, and I guess I just wanted your opinion on, I don't even know, I just wanted guidance, because
First of all, it's classic, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you know that, right?
Yeah, of course.
I'm told that this guy's interested in asking me out, I'm rolling my eyes, oh my God, I wouldn't go out with him on a bet. Then I find out he actually doesn't want to go out with me, and I'm devastated. Okay.
Yeah.
So that is just conditioning at its most absurd. And here's the thing you've got to keep in mind, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That force of conditioning and self-hatred will use anything to torture you. Now, the reality is you didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
That's the reality. Even if you had, had social habits that he found disgusting, it wouldn't matter. It doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It just means how you are didn't meet his standards.
I know, and I keep wanting to say that, you know, it's because I'm wrong. It's because I did something. It's because I have this.
Conditioned mind, self-hate wants to say that.
Yeah.
So if you, again, if you kind of step back and see that that's a bully beating up a little kid, okay, something happened, the bully comes in and starts beating up this little girl, saying, what did you do wrong? Why did you do that? It's all your fault. Okay, just watch the conversation and see if that's not the way it looks.
It is.
Yeah, and I think...
I kept trying to use every tool I knew. I feel like I have this toolbox of little Zen tools.
Uh-huh.
And I kept trying to use every one over and over, but like this really tingling thing in my chest wouldn't go away. It felt so heavy. I just kept using every tool over and over and over. I mean, is that what you're supposed to do? I mean, I know conditioning's coming in and saying this stuff, and I keep saying, I know it'll pass, but...
Well,
the emotion was so terrible. I kept saying, oh, but I just want it to pass now.
Yeah, okay.
What do you do?
So there's the little kid being beaten up.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're standing on the sidelines going, I just want this to be over, I just want this to be over, I just want this to be over, it's not helpful. Right? Because the bully is just continuing to beat up the little kid. So what you do is go up to the little kid, take her by the hand, and walk off with her and say things to her like, it's okay, I'm here with you, it's all right, we're going to make it, there's nothing wrong, you didn't do anything, it's fine, it's okay, don't worry about it, listen to me, you're perfectly fine. I love
you. So I may do that 300 times, but I just keep doing it.
You just keep doing it until you wear the bleed down.
Okay. That's what I needed to hear. Because it felt funny to literally say that to myself 300 times.
Yep. So go for 600, then 900, then 12 million.
Okay.
Yeah,
I will.
Never stop. If suffering happens in a conversation, okay, it happens in that bully beating up a child conversation. Other conversation is the thing that ends the suffering. And so just stay in that conversation until there's no more suffering. Then you can quit talking.
Okay, that's great.
All right.
Thanks so much, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Sherry, you up for one more?
I am.
We've got Phyllis in Oklahoma.
All right.
Hey, Phyllis.
Hi.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yay, I'm so excited.
How's it going in Oklahoma?
It's nice and warm, but it's been a beautiful summer. It's rained, which we haven't had for a long time, and a little bit too much, but in some people's opinion. But we've been in a drought for so long that it felt kind of good, but now we're kind of getting tired of it. I love everything that's been said, and I have never called in before. I am new to the Zen Buddhist practice, although I have been practicing meditation. I love what that first caller was talking about, the addiction of alcohol, and it's so ironic. And that was my conditioning as a child. You know, I was brought up to believe there was something wrong with me as a black sheep of the family, and I was a change of life baby, and I wasn't wanted. And, you know, of course, I was emotionally abused and had older sister and brother, and every night I didn't know if my brother was going to kill me or not. So, you know, then you go to years later, this stuff surfaced, and in the conditioning, I started believing that that's what I was, and then I started drinking, and I drank for about 3.5 years and couldn't quit. It was where I was at a point I felt I had no choice, and got help. And I have been in a program for for 20 years, and I found that in our 10th step, it talks about prayer and meditation, and I have been practicing meditation, I believe, probably all of my life.
Uh-huh.
In some form or another. And I used to have a lot of faith, and my husband and I have done a lot of traveling, and I'm 53, and before I was 50, we went to somewhere every summer, British Columbia, and stayed for 3 or 4 or 5 years in the summer there, and then we went to Mendocino, California, or Fort Bragg for a couple years. And I always knew, you know, that wherever we went, we were going to be okay financially. He'd get a job, I'd get a job, we'd work, and of course, then they'd ask us to come back, and everywhere we go in the world, I've always got friends in the program. So I've never been afraid of travel, but in 2000, my son died. He's 30 years old from the disease of alcoholism, and he died or either was killed. It's still, you know what I mean. It's one of those things. And of course, the first thing the doctor did was put me on antidepressants. I fought that because I'm totally anti-drug. My grandfather was part Cherokee, and he said white man's medicine will kill you. So I've always been afraid of taking medications, but I finally, decided that, okay, I will, and I took it for about a year and a half or however long, and then I got worse, and I told the doctor, and so he doubled the prescription, and then I became suicidal at the age of 50. When I was 50. And then so this process went on, and then I had what I thought was a spiritual awakening, a moment of clarity, and everything was okay, and I was okay with everything. And then I realized that the medication, so I just quit taking it all for once 2 years ago, or a little over 2 years ago in July, it was before July. And when I quit taking the antidepressant, and you didn't know you were supposed to not quit it all at once, But something happened, and my husband and I were, I hadn't traveled because in 2002 I had a spinal injury and a broken arm. And I've got herniated disc up and down my back, and now I have a growth on my back. It's been there since the accident, and I'm one of those people, they say, those people who believe in miracles. Anyway, but a friend of mine had introduced me to, he practices this meditation, Zen meditation, or the Buddhist, and he gave me this book called Turning Toward Happiness. And it just really gotten me through because I had an experience where when we were traveling, of course, a good girlfriend of mine I'd known 20-something years passed away. We did things together twice a week, a bunch of us girls, and it was a spiritual place. It was a Native American sweat lodge, and I had gone to Sundance for 3 or 4 years in a row and met people from all over the world, Africa and Australia and Switzerland. I just had a marvelous life, and then when I fell, it seemed like, and what I realized was by watching this experience was that the antidepressant, I wasn't depressed, I was just grieving.
Right.
You know, going through the process.
Yes.
And I think it delayed that.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so then when we took this trip 2 years ago in July, we were headed for Canada, and we got to Dauphin, Manitoba, Canada, and I had a friend that had just died that December, and that day we left, we found out our other best friend that's like a brother to me and my husband had passed away, and we'd known him for over 20-something years.
Nice.
And I don't know what happened, but I was in this museum that it used to be a church, and I had an experience where I saw all these teachings on the wall from Buddha, from, you know, different places, all on the wall, and I was so sad, and I was so, my husband had been going through a depression, and I was just so sad, and I walked around that room, and I finally, and then everyone was gone, but my husband and I stood at the podium, and I went to myself, why can't I have some of this? And then it felt like warm honey came over my head, and all of a sudden, I had no physical pain. I was happy. I was joyous. And, of course, that scared my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went from being one person to another person.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he started thinking something was wrong with me, and, of course, I had... And I started falling into the conditioning, his conditioning, and I got really bad, and so we ended up coming home. And I had people saying different things, and it was a strange anomaly, but this whole health issue started then. I now have high blood pressure, but I'm not retaining any sodium. And they can't figure out what it is. It's like an anomaly. They have checked me for brain tumor. I've had three doctors.
Phyllis, all of these health issues happened after that experience or after your husband got so concerned about you?
Well, after I had the experience, it was like I was so happy, and I think it, then something happened. I don't know what. I don't know what happened, but I became very sick physically. Started.
Okay,
sick.
Now I hear that music playing in the background.
Yes.
And so what that means is they want us to hang up.
Okay.
So how about if you call us back next week?
I'm sorry I took up so much time.
That's all right. We have to get the background.
All right. Love what y'all are doing, and I'm so grateful I got to talk to you. Thank you.
Take care of
both
yourself,
of you.
And we'll talk next week.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Phyllis.
Thanks so much for calling, Phyllis, and thank you, Sherry, for having us as your guest host today.
It was just a delight and a pleasure to hear your voices.
Well, very good. And I believe you and Michael will be back live next week.
We can only hope. Thanks, guys.
Thank you,
Sherry.
Thanks
a lot, Sherry.
Good night.